Welcome to the Divorce Survival Guide podcast, where we have open and honest conversations about co-parenting, separation, divorce, and the hardest question of all, should you stay or should you go? I'm Kate Anthony, your Divorce Survival Guide, and I'm here to help you navigate some of the roughest waters you've ever swum in and answer some of your toughest questions. I've been to hell and back. And now it's my mission in life to help you get to the other side of this process with your sanity and your heart intact. Hey everyone, welcome back. So I am bringing Tammy Wallensack back to you today. Tammy is one of our favorite guests, and when she's on this show, she said her phone rings off the hook. So we're doing it again. She's got a little bit more information for you today about keeping your house, selling your house, refinancing your mortgage, all of those things. Tammy is a licensed senior loan officer and a 28-plus year veteran of the industry. She has experience working in multiple roles and facets of the industry, and she's discovered that her true passion is helping divorcing individuals navigate their home equity solutions and mortgage options while going through the most challenging time of their life. Tammy has earned the certification as a certified divorce lending professional. This specialization provides the ability to identify potential gaps in the agreement that cannot be met during the mortgage process and help clients' divorce teams come up with solutions that may not have been considered or uncovered. This is really important stuff. One of the things to know about Tammy is she can now work with women in all 50 states, and having a call with her is free. It's actually against her business practices, and it's unethical for her to charge for her services in advising you on these things. So grab your notebook and a pen and listen up for my conversation with Tammy Wallensack. Tammy, thank you so much for coming back on to the show.
Oh my gosh, it's absolutely my pleasure. I get so many compliments on your podcast, and I'm just honored to be here. So thank you.
You are so welcome. Thank you one of the things that we were just talking about before we hit record is that since we last recorded, you've gotten, first of all, a flood of inquiries from my listeners, which is wonderful. Yeah. You've learned a few things in the mix that we wanted to kind of sort of, a few myths to bust and a few new tidbits of information.
So, absolutely. It's just been such a journey, and it's been so great to learn all these kind of little things and nuances.
Yeah. And that's really what it is, right? It's like, I think the more people you work with, the more, like you just said, like everyone's kind of a snowflake. Everyone has a different scenario. Each person slightly different. And then you go, oh, wait, we can work with that. Hold on. So how does that apply to, so tell us what it is that you learned that's sort of the most revealing or shocking or surprising to you.
So I, as you know, have been in the mortgage business for decades. And I like to just say decades. So,
good enough.
and I've asked multiple colleagues of mine that are just straight mortgage originators, lenders across the country, managers, operational people. And I've said, look, if somebody has a 30-year fixed conventional mortgage, can somebody assume that mortgage? And they would all hands down tell you no.
Right.
They would actually pull up loan documents. It's in your documentation when you close on your mortgage. They'd pull it up and they'd circle this area on the loan documents that says not assumable.
Huh. Okay.
And I would have sworn that too. And I probably have said it on numerous podcasts. And so I started talking to all your listeners. As soon as I was on that podcast, it literally blew up my calendar. And I was like, this is an area that people are really passionate about. First of all, it's their biggest asset.
Yes.
A lot of emotion is tied to the home. And
Right. There's
so many things that people want to know before they tread on into the unknown. So I started digging and investigating. And I, since then, also have changed banks. So now I can lend in all 50 states, which is really great.
So good.
And so this is a larger institution, and I was able to really dig in and try to get the information. And what I found out is the answer is maybe.
Could be, possibly.
And so I was like really fascinated by that, because some of these larger banks, the Chases of the world, you know, these really large institutions are telling people, you know, once your divorce is final, here, fill out this stack of documentation and we'll tell you whether or not you qualify.
Mm.
Okay. I don't know about you, but a lot of things have to be decided on before they go into a legal binding document.
Right.
And what if you do all of that and then they're telling people it's a 6-month waiting period?
Well, that doesn't work for divorce.
Right. Well, exactly what I've had women come to me that tried that, went down that whole rabbit hole, only to be told you don't qualify. And now, so they put in their settlement agreement, I'm going to either assume the mortgage or sell. So guess what? Now you're being told you don't qualify, and now you're being forced into a sale. So horrible, horrible situation. So I really like to give people what all of the options are, what the timelines are, and come up with a backup plan for yourself, right? Because if for some reason your bank says no, you really want to have, and then a lot of times they don't understand what an assumption actually means. And that is another thing that we investigate together.
What does an assumption mean for the layperson, right? Like I want to make this so that women like really understand what we're talking about here. What does it mean?
Yeah, that's a great question. And one that's, I think, very obscure and people don't really know. What it means is if you have two people that are on a mortgage and one person needs to be released from the liability of the mortgage, the other person is taking full responsibility for that mortgage and those exact terms that you currently have. Unless people are living under a rock.
So the exact terms.
Exact terms. Like so, meaning you can keep your interest rate, you can keep your payment.
So this is not, we don't have to refinance.
You may not have to, correct.
And so let's say I'm trying to decide whether I'm going to keep the house, whether I'm going to be able to keep the house.
Yeah.
And how do I know if I can, how do I know if I'm going to be, is there something in my paperwork that says that I might be able to assume it?
There isn't anything in your paperwork. You have to go back to your servicer, the person you make your mortgage payment to. They're the only person or the only company entity that can tell you if your loan is assumable. You're going to call them and they're going to say yes or no. The issue is whether or not they have a process and procedures for the qualification or the process of allowing you to do this. So people go and they call and sometimes they're told, no, your loan is not assumable and there's nothing you can do. It's either going to be a yes or it's going to be a no. If it's a yes, you would want to know what the timeline is, right? What's the timeline? What's the cost? Because sometimes even though you're keeping the same exact term, some of the lenders are charging fees. Well, you can't roll it into the loan because the loan terms are the same. So you have to write a check, right?
I see. And so what kinds of fees are we talking about? Is this a $500 fee or is this a $25,000 fee?
Well, I heard $10,000 on a particular case. It was a percentage of the loan balance. So they wanted to charge 1.5% of the principal balance. So it runs the gamut, though. But you really want to be prepared for what that cost is. And it might make financial sense to do that. But you're putting all this stuff in the legal binding document and you're negotiating with that assumption, right, is that you're going to do this. So you cannot roll in equity either. So a lot of times, let's use numbers because I think people can conceptually look at this when there's numbers involved. So let's say that your house is worth $400,000 and you owe $200,000. Really easy numbers. I don't need a calculator.
Right.
We have $400,000 of equity, right? So far, so good.
Yes. So far, so good. I can do this math.
Dollars worth of equity. And this, like we said, it's snowflakes here. So we're just saying in general terms, there's $200,000 worth of equity, $100 to each spouse. Okay. $100,000 is each spouse's equity. So with a typical equity buyout, you could conceivably, that $200,000 is going to go into your marital asset bucket. And then you're going to start negotiating. There might be retirement, bank accounts, stock accounts, or what, all these things. And that $100,000 of equity, one of the ways you could pay out your spouse and have them released from the liability is to refinance and roll in the $100,000 with the $200,000. So that's a new loan, $300,000. You cannot do that with a mortgage assumption. All you're doing is keeping the $200,000. So if you owe $100,000 to your spouse, you're going to have to negotiate it some other way.
Oh, I see. I see. So if you assume the mortgage, you're keeping the terms. So you're going to have to cash whatever you owe them. You're going to have to find some other
avenue
from some other, whether it's your retirement or cash
mom and
some
dad I've seen
right yeah. So that's actually a really huge consideration,
right?
Is it worth, right? Because it might actually be worth refinancing at the higher interest rate so that you can fold that into it. Right. Because that's really interesting.
You may want to look at what the actual payment is, because $100,000 of home equity doesn't really equal $100,000 of retirement from an asset perspective. There's maintenance that goes along with homes. There's taxes. There's all these costs that go along with a house.
Right.
And when you have $100,000 worth of retirement, if you were to liquidate that, there's taxes and stuff that go along with that. So you really need somebody to look at if that makes financial sense to do that.
And that's you?
No, I would consider calling a certified divorce financial analyst.
So that would be a CDFA. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And a CDFA can look at your full marital balance sheet and say, okay, that makes sense for you to keep just the terms and give up the retirement or whatever it is to just assume the current mortgage, because you're going to have to give up something.
Right.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepard-Ota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
So what is the long-term impact of the, right? Because like you said, like $100,000 in equity is not the same as $100,000 in retirement. And right. So like, what is the long-term or like the actual fees that go along with all of it and
right.
The long-term impact of cashing this out versus folding this in?
Correct. Yes. You want to look at it from a financial perspective to make sure. And then if you're going to agree to this in your negotiations, you kind of want to know that you're going to qualify to do that. This isn't just a they're going to let you do it type of thing. You have to actually qualify for the bank to say, okay, your spouse can be released from liability and right. We understand that you can carry that payment alone. Well, if you had two people that purchased a house together and there's two people on a loan together, a lot of times there was a reason for that. They needed both people's income. So,
right. Sure.
Uh-huh. Being very clear that you can qualify, because once you put it in a legal binding document, you know.
Yes. And so this is like, again, as we talked about, I think last time, like this is stuff you've got to figure out before you put it in the legal binding document. You've got to talk to your CDFA, talk to your CDLP,
yes.
Right? Which is the certified divorce lending professional that Tammy is.
Yeah.
Right. You want to talk to these people and run these numbers before you agree to anything in your divorce. And so does this push the agreement out? Like how far out are we pushing this so that like we need to, you know, you've got people who are like, I've got to get divorced. We've got to get out of this house.
Yeah. Because you really need to know the timeline, right? If you put in your settlement agreement that you're going to do this, let's say in 90 or 120 days, which is very standard, I'd say. I see a lot of settlement agreements that say that. Right. And then you're sitting in this line. I have a woman right now, as we're speaking, that did that. She started in July of last year talking to her bank. Her deadline is January 28th of this month. The lender that's going to supposedly do this assumption hasn't done a thing. And she is panicked. She came to me at the beginning of January and said, I need to start. I have to refinance. It's my only option. I do not want further litigation because I don't have him off that mortgage.
Right. And if you're in, look, if you're in an amicable situation where you're like, hey, you know, this hasn't happened yet. And I, you know, can we right. just sort of pause? Fine. Right. That right. would be, that would be one thing. But if you're in a high conflict divorce, or if you're divorcing somebody who is abusing you, which is right. making it even more high conflict, then first of all, they'll use that as a, they'll weaponize that against you, right? 100%. You're now in violation of a legal document.
Yeah, which is her case. She's very concerned because
you're in contempt, basically.
Conflict. Right, exactly.
I mean, my hope is that if somebody were to bring you up on charges of contempt, and that you went before a judge and you said, here is, and I think this is the important piece, is in documentation, always documentation, to say, here are all of the times I have contacted my lending officer, and this is, I am hamstrung. There's nothing I can do about this. I don't, hopefully you're going to get a judge who will see reason.
I would think so too.
But you can't rely on that.
No, right. It was a cost reward thing for her. And she luckily had the wherewithal to be able to do this and absorb that higher payment. And she just didn't want to deal with it, really. You know, she sure. didn't want to be responsible for even going down that path or having to justify it. So back to the timeline things, you really, that's why one of those questions, if you talk to your lender and they say, yes, it's assumable, a lot of times that's all people hear, period. That's all they heard.
Right.
And you have to ask further questions and dig deep. I've actually jumped on the call with people before so that I could ask appropriate questions and dig further.
Right. Because how do you know? You don't know what questions you're to ask, right?
You want to know timelines, the cost thing. I mean, the one woman that I said said $10,000, she didn't have $10,000 to assume the mortgage.
Right.
So, you know, that was off the table.
Right. Right. And are you taking out a loan for $10,000? Right. And then you're taking, you know, at what interest rate? And right. all of it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. So yes, I've learned so much and I've been able to really help people understand what they're signing up for and really understand that it's not as cut and dry as you may think. You can't just hear one word and be like, okay, great. You know, and move forward with that. Understanding all of your options is going to make for a better settlement agreement and give you peace of mind moving forward that you can carry out what you signed up for.
And this is really great information to know that it might actually be possible.
Yes. Yes.
Right. And that you might actually be able to assume your mortgage at the current terms, which is just really mind-blowing information that I think a lot of people are going to be really happy to know. So what happens if you can't? So if you can't assume the mortgage and you're not going to, let's say you're a stay-at-home parent and you mm-hmm. don't have the credit score or the income or mm-hmm. whatever to be able to assume the mortgage, is yeah. your only option to sell the house?
Well, there is, you know, a lot of times right now, especially last year, really, a lot of times people were just doing delay. So they were delaying the inevitable of being able to do that and setting. And if you have the timeline ahead of you, like let's say you say, I'm going to stay in the house and I won't refinance for a year, and it gives you the timelines that you need in order to either use support for income, to get your credit in line. I worked with a woman where we did some things with her credit. She was able to increase her credit score significantly and then put her in a position to be able to do it. But she needed the time to do it. You can't.
Sure. Right.
You can't stay 90 days, right? But if you have a spouse that's willing to work with you, then potentially you can stay on the mortgage together for a certain period of time if they'll agree to it. Yes. What you're agreeing to, and I tell people this often, is you're agreeing to being business partners with your spouse, ex-spouse, and own real estate together. So there's a lot more things that have to be uncovered if you're going to do that, right?
Yeah. I mean, there need to be really strong agreements in place about, you know, during this time, who's responsible if we need a new roof? Who's responsible if the pipes back up?
Right.
How are we dividing, you know, maintenance? How are we handling maintenance during this time? And like, if I'm paying maintenance all this time and now I've put a $20,000 roof on and it has maybe, you know, increased the value of the home or whatever, who gets to benefit from that?
Yeah.
If I have paid that out, like, or do I get reimbursed that through the, you know, the refi or whatever, or the sale?
So many more things need to be addressed and so many things that a lot of times people don't think of. So I'm in Illinois, and one of the things that happens in Illinois when people sign up for this, when you are no longer related to each other through the divorce, then the title of the house, when you're married, you hold title in what's called tenancy by the entirety. And what that means is if something were to happen to one of you, the other person owns the house, right? Like if somebody dies or something, then the other person owns the house. When you're no longer related to each other through a divorce, the title is then diverted to tenants in common. So then you own 50% of the house.
Okay.
So now you both own 50%. So, and I tell people this, it might be a little bit morbid, but you know, so let's say you agree to that and all this stuff, and you're going to do it for this period of time until Tommy gets out of high school, and that's 5 years. And then in 2 years, your spouse goes out and gets remarried and then gets hit by a bus.
You're now 50% owner with his new wife. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you have a great plan that completely is going to unravel.
I mean, absolutely. Even just from a, just like an emotional standpoint, I remember when I moved out of my home, my ex kept our house, and then he got remarried, and then they had to move out of the home because it was too small for them, because they now had a blended family. There was a bigger family. And then I would see on our local Facebook group for our town that she was looking for renters for my house. And look, totally fine, totally normal. Like, of course she was. That was like, right? Like, yes, that made sense. Just the vomit that it induced in me.
Yeah.
And just the heart, you know, because I loved that house. I loved it. I could not afford it, but I loved it. That was really hard. And so I can't even imagine if he had died, if she and I, like, that would have just been a nightmare.
I know. And it's nothing that you really want to address or think of, but things that you're signing up for, because it seems easy at the time. You're like, hey, let's just stay on the mortgage together and we'll just do this thing and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of legality that goes along with what you're attempting to do that people don't think through properly.
Uh-huh. Right. These are the long-term concepts. Like, we have to think these things through, because then when we think them through, then we can plan for them. We can actually put it in agreement, right? That, you know,
attorney and, you know, make sure you're covered and, you know, make sure the title is held differently or whatever. But
exactly. You know, my best friend lives in an apartment complex, and he's the manager of the complex, but the owner died and it was held, right? Like half of the complex went to the owner's son or daughter. I can't remember. And then the other half went to the new spouse, the brand new spouse, and that they didn't get along. So now the child, the son or daughter, I can't remember, and the spouse own this together. And now they're like, the child is selling it, because they're like, I don't want to be in business with this, my father's new spouse that I did not like.
That's a great example. And a real one. It's a real example. I mean, stuff happens, and
yeah.
You can't just say, like, this is easy and I feel comfortable with a mortgage payment. And, you know, we're just going to kind of shove this part under the rug because a lot of times it is a big asset that needs to be addressed.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
How does one know? I mean, I'm assuming calling you, Tammy, would be a really good start to know all of the questions to ask. I feel like we need a one sheet or something. Do you have one? Do you have a one sheet for all of the questions that we need to ask if this is happening?
So I do a divorce mortgage plan for people, and it's actually a document, and I look at it tactically and say, look, this is what your new mortgage payment would be. This is what it would look like if you assume the mortgage and give up, you know, the equity. This is what. So I do all of those options and I give them the questions to ask. And I say, look, call your mortgage servicer, ask them these questions. If they don't give you good guidance, I'll jump on a call with you. So that's part of my process and part of my offering is to do that. I am a mortgage lender. So the way that I get paid is to do lending, you know, is to do mortgage loans. But it doesn't matter, Kate, because at the end of the day, if you're doing what's right and people know what all of their options are, that'll come back around in the universe, right? If you're giving the right solutions for people in a very tumultuous time of their lives, if they end up selling that house and then end up buying something new, I believe they'll call me, you know?
I believe they will too, because they should. And now you said you're with a new bank. And so you cover all 50 states.
Yes.
Your work. Yeah. So anyone in the U.S., you can help and advise. And so you're saying that you told me this last time and I feel like we need to have we need to have a business talk. So you have these conversations with women at no cost.
Right. Hey, there is a reason, because believe me, I am a business person. I would love to charge for consulting because I do a lot of energy and effort. And I, you know, I say that because there's a lot that goes in, and it's a very long timeline. As you know, people don't just get divorced overnight.
No.
So a lot of times I'm talking to people for a year. The reason is because I'm a licensed loan originator. And because of that, I cannot charge divorce client for my services. And then you, Kate, all of a sudden want to buy a house and I help you and I don't charge you for consulting and helping you through the buying process.
Yeah.
Right. So
I see. So it's actually a conflict for you to charge as a consultant.
It's a conflict, and it could be considered disparate treatment, and I could lose my license.
It's a compliance issue too.
Totally a compliance issue. I'm not just trying to be generous.
So you guys, Tammy can't charge you.
Well, look, if there's mortgage financing in your future, I'm not going to direct them one way or another. My divorce mortgage plan, I give them all of their options. It's whatever's right for them and their family is the right answer. But if there is mortgage financing and they come to the realization that they need to do something, I would want to be your girl. You know, that's all.
And I want you to be their girl too. I really do. You are, I mean, compliance and, you know, whatever. But I mean, you don't have to do this at all, right? You can keep compliant by not doing it. You're just choosing to continue to do it and just not charge. So that to me, like, you know, that speaks of your generosity of spirit and your the fact that you are really in this to help people.
Yes, right.
And that is, you know, that's a beautiful thing. And you're right. I think, you know, when someone's had a consultation with you about this kind of thing and it has, you know, gone well and you've helped them, of course they're going to come to you when they need a mortgage.
Right. I have seen it really pay off for me in the sense that people are getting really good guidance and advice in a time where they're feeling vulnerable.
Yeah.
Right. And they're feeling scared and they're feeling a lot of things. And if I can help and guide them and even direct them to other professionals, right? A CDFA or other types of professionals, or even give them a little bit of guidance about how I went through my divorce and what that meant for me to connect with them that way so that they don't feel so isolated and alone. Mm-hmm. It makes a huge difference, I think, in people's just their hope, gives them hope, right? That they're that I can do this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. So Tim, you have on your website, you have a flip book.
Yeah.
Can you tell people a little bit more about what that is?
So it's just a digital brochure that talks about the divorce mortgage planning process. It gives a checklist of items that people should be aware of when they're thinking about their maintenance in their homes and some of the costs that go along with the house.
Yeah,
I tell people a lot of times you don't want to sign up for something that's going to make you house poor and you're going to have to live a lifestyle that you weren't, that you didn't understand you were signing up for, right? You don't want to take on the house. Like you said, Kate, the house that you loved was too much house.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't too much house. It was too much money. Right. It was a very small house, but it was Los Angeles. It was very expensive.
Well, that's what I mean. Too much as far as financially. The financial undertaking. You want to look at what your lifestyle is going to be post-divorce. You want to look at the maintenance of that house. You want to look at all the costs that are involved. When you own real estate, it comes with costs. So make sure that you're understanding. So that all that stuff is in the flip book and just, you know, why you would want to do divorce mortgage planning.
Yes. Yes. Do you ever, when talking to someone about all of this, do you ever say to them that there's no reason to buy? Maybe you should rent?
Yes, I do.
And
absolutely.
What? Yeah. And in what circumstances would you do that?
So I have a woman that just came to me yesterday. As a matter of fact, there was very little equity in the house. She had three children. She was dealing with some abuse and some financial abuse. And she was in a situation where she was going to school and trying to get a better education so she could land a better job. And in her particular case, she really needed to stabilize herself. And renting, when you rent, you know exactly what your payment's going to be.
That's right.
I mean, your rent is your rent.
That's right.
There's no surprises. There's no backed up sewers. There's no.
Well, if and there are, but they're not your responsibility.
Right.
That's like, listen,
right.
You know, when I had mold poisoning. And my house had to be remediated. And, you know, I have really great landlords that I literally texted from my doctor's office and was like, hey, I've been sick for years. I just found out why. And it's the house that's killing me.
Yeah.
I moved into a hotel that night and they handled it, but it was over $10,000 on their dime.
Yes. Yes.
You know,
oh my gosh. All those things.
If that had been me, like I would have had to have burned the house down. Like, I don't know.
Right.
Like, you know, like.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. And mm-hmm. so there are definitely circumstances where you shouldn't, and it's okay. You don't have to own real estate, right? You know, at that particular moment of your life, you don't have to go from owning a house to owning a house.
No.
Now, I can't say this, Kate. When there's a divorce present and somebody owns a house, if they get through the divorce process in lending, you could potentially be considered a first-time homebuyer again. So there are some programs and things that allow you to buy again for very limited down payment and things. So there's opportunity there, but doesn't mean that you have to take advantage of it the minute you get divorced. You could take some time, take a little breathing room, make sure that you understand. I was just talking to somebody this morning on the phone about this and how clouded my brain was when I went through my divorce and how it's a true phenomenon, right? I mean,
absolutely.
You make decisions that you being 8 years out of it, I look back and think, oh, that was so stupid.
Yeah. Same. One of them being about my house, but that's a whole other story, which we talked about, right? But I don't regret giving up my house, but I gave up all claim to it, all equity, everything. So there was no equity. It was because it was upside down because of the housing market crash because it was 2009.
Well, we were in that same boat for sure.
Right. And then my husband, when he sold it, he made like a, you know, $350,000 profit and I got none of it.
So painful.
I would do things differently. But, you know, as I think Susan said at one point to me, she said, you know, we didn't know in 2009, like this was the first time this had happened. And we actually didn't know. Now that we've gone through that, there are new ways of looking at a bubble burst or if your house is upside down. Is underwater. We look at that differently now than we did back in 2009. So, you know, you live and learn. Tammy, so your flip book, this that we were just talking about, that is at your website, tammywallensack.com/flipbook.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah.
Or we can go to takeorleavethehouse.com. If people don't want to try to remember how to spell my name, I have a directive URL. So it's takeorleavethehouse.com, which is also an easy way to find me.
Good. That's wonderful. And where else can people find you? Everything's on takeorleavethehouse.com.
So Instagram. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn as Tammy Wallensack, CDLP, which is Certified Divorce Lending Professional. But that's everything is on my website and can direct you there. So.
Okay. Including your calendar for people, your calendar for people
to calendar. Yes.
Which
calendar, when I went on your podcast, Kate, it literally blew up. So now I have some buffers in there because so if your listeners are in need of talking to me and they're in dire need and don't see something on my calendar, just email me and I'm happy to try to fit you in because yes, I was like, oh my gosh, how am I actually going to do my job?
I know. I felt kind of bad. I was like,
it was fun. I mean, it was a good problem to have.
Yes. And like you said, like, you know, a learning experience, right? Because you got to like talk to a bunch of people and realize that there are things that are not the cookie cutter stuff that we learn when we're getting certified or whatever it is, right? But
absolutely.
Like everyone's situation, different states, things are different. So it's I'm glad that happened for you. And I also
Thank you so much.
Hope that you, you know, get mortgage business out of it as well. So
yeah. I think, you know, as we go into this new year and rates cool down some, and I don't have a crystal ball, so I can't say rates are going to drop, but I think that rates are going to feel a little bit more normalized for people so that they can absorb potentially a cleaner break with their spouses and not making these crazy agreements with each other.
I really hope so. All right. Tammy, thank you so much for coming back on the show. And everybody just takeorleavethehouse.com. Go find Tammy in all the places. And thanks for coming back, Tammy.
Thank you so much, Kate. I sure appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Divorce Survival Guide podcast. If you like what you hear, head on over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen in and leave me a review. And don't forget to follow me on Instagram at The Divorce Survival Guide. I'll see you next time. And until then, remember, you, my love, deserve to be happy.